Hello and welcome everyone. In today's show, which is episode 13, myself and Gregor are talking to Mark Christie and Ian Connolly, who are the organisers of the Scottish Summit event. But firstly, let's catch up on what we've been up to this week. So Gregor, what have you been up to this week?
So work-wise, I've been busy looking into SQL Server, Data Factory, some automation for customers using Azure Functions. I've also been talking to lots of new customers about IoT and machine learning. Non-work-wise, we started our series AKS Hero to Zero, where you're going to teach me AKS. So I am super excited about this. This is going to be an amazing series, and I can't wait to get more into it. How about you, Richard? What have you been up to?
So work-wise, I've been working mostly this week with a customer on moving their stuff from AWS to Azure, all sort of AKS-related stuff. So that's been quite fun, setting up the whole environment, migrating their applications, hopefully looking at converting them to Helm charts and everything like that. So that's super exciting, super fun. And in my spare time, just been prepping for this awesome AKS Zero to Hero series with you, creating slides, working out what we're going to say, how we're going to say it, creating the thumbnails. Super excited about this. I think it's going to help so many people. And if you've got any questions or you want to sort of get involved or how, or you just want to know something about AKS, let us know and we can make sure we get it sorted and hopefully we can reach as many people as possible and make everyone aware of how great AKS is, because it's going to be big this year. It's going to be very big.
Yeah, agreed. Right, cool. Let's go on with the show.
Awesome. Let's do it.
So today we are joined by Mark Christie and Ian Connolly, who are the founders and organisers of the Scottish Summit Conference. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you guys getting on?
Doing really well, considering we're now in lockdown version. I don't even know what number it is anymore, but I'm doing really good. For me, what about yourself, Mark?
Yeah, I'm good. Just we're starting to obviously ramp up for Scottish Summit. It feels like we hadn't even finished the first one and now we're on to the next one.
Awesome. So for the people who don't know you two, like myself, I didn't really know you guys before this podcast. Could you tell us a bit about yourselves and sort of how you got involved with Scottish Summit, IT as a whole? And perhaps, Mark, if you go first.
Yeah, cool. So I've got a weird way. I think everyone who works in IT has got a weird story of how they got into it. So my background is actually as a football coach. So I was a football coach, wasn't making that much money in it, and was kind of, had always had IT around me because my dad's an IT project manager. So I just kind of done a few days contracting here and there and actually found out I was good at it. So ended up getting into sort of hardware and networking, worked for a partner who just so happened to be a Great Plains partner. They then got me doing installs and sort of software side of things, and really just grew into there, into the whole Dynamics community, into CRM. It just all grew from there. So it's a strange way in, but you're kind of glad to be part of this awesome community that we've got.
And for myself, bit of a similar journey to some extent. It merges at one point. I was always into IT to some extent, messing about like back in the days of the Spectrum, doing a wee bit of coding and stuff on that. C64, all the rest of it kind of there. Into retail, and just still kind of tinkered a bit. I ended up working in a bank call centre and was looking for a way out. Went to evening uni and done a CCNA, and from there got into a service desk, and it was in the oil and gas industry. So done a lot of stuff there with different application support, SQL databases, Oracle, ETLs. A wee bit of CRM at that point was my first into CRM itself, and it was CRM 4 with a migration to CRM 11, and that's where I met Mark. He was working for another company that we were supporting, and from there kind of moved on. I ended up leaving that service desk and doing my CIS and working as a network and a NOC, doing configuring Cisco routers, that type of stuff. Just realised I didn't really want to do that. It changed shift patterns. Went back to doing CRM support and nav support, and just kind of grew from there, and now work as a contractor as part of that. Gives me the benefit to be able to do Scottish Summit that we did last year, and obviously this year takes a lot of time doing that, and the community and to being part of that itself is really kind of my quick one-stop whistle tour in to where we are.
Nice. Okay. So now that we've talked about, mentioned the Scottish Summit, Ian, tell us all about the Scottish Summit.
So Scottish Summit is something that's grown. So last year we had, so let's go back 2 years, was the first event that me and Mark kind of operated ourselves, and it was a specific CRM event. It was the D365 Saturday Scotland. I say specific CRM, it wasn't. We had some finance and operations and some stuff in there, but that was very small. It was like 30 sessions or something like that. Then last year we had the first in-person Scottish Summit where we had over 1,000 people, and we looked to bring in the whole dynamic stack, the whole kind of Microsoft platform itself, some interpersonal skills and different bits there. Many sessions did we have last year, Mark? Do you remember? I can't remember off the top of my head. It was a lot more, but with 1,000 people, and we had some Azure track, we had some M365 or O365 at the time. And that was in person, as I say. And obviously COVID's kind of flung a little bit of a spanner in the works for all of that stuff. So we have now went online, and we are offering in the region of 400 plus tracks right now. 400 plus sessions, sorry, over like 40 tracks. And it's bringing everybody around the world to it. It's totally open. We have the same interpersonal skills. We have some dynamic CRM or CE. We have Azure, and we've even split down that Azure track into not just Azure, but we've got some Dev Azure, Azure Security, and we've tried to kind of break that open as well, because it's not really an area that we know too much about from the Azure side of it. So we kind of obviously went out and asked some different people to help us break that down into a much more granular track. So we're kind of delivering that as well. And it is at the end of February. So we don't have a long time to kind of finalise it and get it going, but we're there, we're getting it. We've got an app out, and that's available in the iOS or the Apple Store if you want to download it. You obviously need to register for a ticket. And most importantly, it is still free to attend, actually. You can sign up for that at scottishsummit.com.
That's awesome. Still free. And all of those extra sessions. That's really cool. So, Mark, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is we are trying to be as inclusive as we can with this. So there are tracks, things like not just technical tracks. So there's accessibility and how you include everyone, personal skills, deployment skills, project skills. It's the soft skills. I mean, let's be honest, we're in this industry. We all know that you can pick up the tech side of things very quickly, but it's the soft skills that a lot of people don't have. So that's what we're trying to bring forward, is get these soft skills, get people thinking about different things and not just the technical aspect of it. I think, as Ian said, we've kind of grown from 300 the first year, over 1,000 last year. Registrations at the moment are sitting at 1,400. We actually had a chat when we finished the last Scottish Summit, and we weren't going to do anything until 2022. So we weren't going to do anything at all this year. But we bowed to peer pressure. Everyone was saying, can you do something? Can you do something? And at that point, I mean, we, from day one, we've said, we don't think people are either going to be able to or be comfortable traveling at this time next year. We kind of knew that's where the landscape was going to sit. So we decided to pivot and go virtual. And going virtual means that we can do a lot more. We can get people from all over the world. And one of the parts that we are kind of most, not impressed, but most enthusiastic about is people that maybe never had the money to be able to travel, or they had kids so they couldn't do it at the weekend, or there were blockers there. Being virtual, we've hopefully removed as many of those blockers as we can, which means we're going to see a lot more new speakers.
As you bring in the new speakers there, Mark, that's the one thing I was thinking that we hadn't spoke about there. Along with the soft skills, what we've tried to encourage is new speakers into the community. Lots of people come along to the community, but they maybe don't have the, I don't want to say belief in themselves, but I just can't think of a better word at the moment, or just they don't know how to get in and they don't know how to present. They're unsure on it. They've got great content, and when you talk to them, they're so, so engaging. But they just don't have that kind of gusto to get up and stand. They're just unsure how to do it. So we've built a whole new speakers track as well, where the new speakers are actually all being allocated a mentor so they can have somebody that they can bounce off, they can work with them, they can do some preparation, talk to them about even down to simple things like breathing techniques for standing up and presenting, so that you can try and take the anxiety that you might have about it and flip that around and understand it's the same feeling as being excited. It's just your brain twists it differently. So that type of thing. So doing a lot of coaching around that and stuff with our new speakers and working on slide decks and sessions with them. So that's something that I think we're really proud of as well, as trying to help grow the community massively.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So hats off to you guys for doing that. Yeah, it's always difficult for new speakers. So encouraging and giving a mentor is brilliant. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, we're also working with some groups like Virtual Power Group to assign the new speakers. So I think in total at the moment we've got, I think it's about 35 new speakers. So as Ian says, they've all been assigned an MVP who's going to mentor them. But some of the people who are totally new speakers, we're working with Virtual Power Group and they are doing classes with them. So we've already had Donna Sarker have some sessions with them. We've got Ben Vollmer lined up. We've got quite a lot of other community people lined up to just say, here's how you present yourself. Here's not even just to how to present yourself, but it's here's how to promote the event. Here's how to get engagement before, during and after. Because a lot of people will come in, do the session and disappear. They'll not get the growing of your own social bubble. So you're delivering your session and maybe you'll get one or two followers off the back if they like your content. Whereas if you're, I think Donna said it brilliantly, she says, give them some homework to do. So yeah, you've been in my session, I've taught you this, go away, look at something and come back to me. And then that can engage your audience for longer than just the 45 minute you're doing your session, which then grows your social following. So some awesome tips in there, things that I've not even thought about myself. So it's an eye opener even for sort of these boring old veteran speakers who have been around for a while.
Yeah, that's very good advice. I love the fact to give people homework. I need to steal that idea, I think. So let's talk a little bit about last year's event. So last year's event was obviously a lot bigger than your M365 day. What sort of issues do you run into organising a big event like that? And how well did it go?
So visually on the top, they look like they go absolutely amazingly without any hiccups or anything, right? Obviously, if you attend it, you just think it was an amazing day. The back end, it's that typical duck under the water element, isn't it? Like the feet are flapping and stuff like that. Just mics not working on the day, or we live streamed two sessions. We live streamed two rooms last year, and at one point one of the live streams went down. And it's just that's kind of stuff that you don't expect. And you obviously need to then kind of deal with, get the live stream back up. And it's maybe just a case of getting a new link and setting it back up. But that was one of the things for me on the day last year that happened. I really remember that going down in the lead up to it. I don't know. What do you think, Mark? Anything?
Well, you know, I'm like being a control freak.
So aye.
That's the biggest problem is being able to hand off things. So we had Robert French as a volunteer coordinator last year, who was absolutely fantastic. I don't think the event would have ran as well as it did without him.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, I think for me, the actual lead up was more than anything. It was actually getting the speakers there, getting the people there, getting the sponsors there. Once everyone was there, there's not really anything you can do about it. Everyone's in the building, everyone's got a session, everyone's got a slide deck. It's either going to work or it's not worked. But we've got bodies in the building. What will be, will be. I think I was more stressed about the first year. I mean, there's a good story that we took everyone out, all the speakers out for food before the event. And for some reason, I got back to the car and my car wouldn't start. So you can imagine, this is about 10 to midnight the night before. I've got stuff in the back of the car for the event, and my car, because it was an electric car, it wouldn't even open. So we couldn't even get into the boot of the car to get stuff out the boot. So we managed to get a jump start at about 1:30 in the morning, and we had the car parked at the hotel. I think me and Ian went out to the hotel, or out to the car about 5:00 in the morning, just to see if we were even going to switch it on and get stuff out of it. That was just ridiculous. But
yeah, that was definitely ridiculous, because the whole idea there as well, try to get some sleep the night before it, knowing full well there's this potential that we're going to have to hoof all this stuff from the car to the venue. How are we going to do it? Yeah, there was no sleep.
I think dealing with that first time round put us in a better place second time round. But yeah, on the day, I think there isn't much you can do on the day. Once everyone's there, as long as you've got everything in place, what will be. It's a leap of faith, I know, and it sounds very blasé, but the majority of the work is the 9 months before the event.
I suppose it's like, if you look at it from that project management perspective, like if you want to talk about the safe and the train driver and all that carry on, like the train's in motion at that point, there is no stopping it. As long as you've got your sponsors, you've got everybody on board that train, it's moving. But you can't even be a conductor right then, you just need to kind of wait and see what happens. But yeah, I think in the lead up to answer the question a little bit more as well, is it's the hard part is getting the sponsorship, getting the attendees, knowing that it's in person, opening the doors in the morning, you've got 1,000 people registered. I think that was probably the moment of letting go of control last year for me, and even the year before, was when you open the doors and people come in. As long as they turn up, it's like that whole Wayne's World thing, isn't it? If you book them, they'll turn up, or book them and they'll show. As long as people come in, then that's it. It's a success at that point. As long as people are coming in, I'm cool, because I know something's going to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. So, because you guys have organised a few conferences now, do you have any tips for anyone out there who is looking at organising one?
Or don't should do
they
it.
Organise? Yeah, I was just going to say, should they organise it?
Tips-wise, I think, have a bit of a clear vision for me. Like, as Mark says, he's a control freak. And to some extent, I am as well, but nowhere near as bad as Mark. Like, we are really bad at giving out jobs for people to do. So this time round for this year, it's the one thing that we probably have learned most, is make sure that you get volunteers, make sure that you're able to get these people engaged, and have volunteers that are going to do stuff for you, rather than volunteers that say, oh, it's like your pal who's wanting to help you move house. Yeah, I'll be there, but they're not there for you when you need it. You just need to make sure that the volunteers do stuff. But that's also part of that letting go of control, because if you ask people to do something, you need to get them to do it. That's the biggest part for me, I think, in organising. Have a clear vision of what you want to do and make sure you get people to support you, because there's no way you can do it yourself. Even if it's a small conference, you still need people to support, to do things on the day. Even if it's running from one room to another with a cable, you can't do all that yourself.
Totally. So obviously organising this event takes a lot of time and effort. How do you guys find the time?
I'm a strange one. I don't sleep that much. So if anyone's kind of been volunteering or helping, they'll see emails going out at ridiculous times. It's usually because I'm just wide awake. I think most people have got a 14-hour day where they do stuff. I've got about like a 19, 20-hour day where I'm just, let's just do it. But it's kind of what Ian said there is passing on and sort of allowing other people to do it. I'm a nightmare for getting to the point where, oh yeah, I need something done. Here you go. Will somebody do this for me? And if it's not done within like 2 hours, I'm like, all right, okay, I'll just do it myself and get it done. That's my biggest problem, and I need to stop sort of doing that. And actually, it's not that I don't have faith and trust in people. I do. But if I want something done, I want it done. I don't want to wait for it to be done.
So you see things as like a checklist, I think.
Yeah.
It's not about when it gets done, it's just it needs done, and for that next checkbox to get done, this one needs to be completed. And that's Mark's thing, is an idea is an idea, but we know we need these 10 steps completed. And if somebody's going to block it at some point, and it could be me blocking it, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's everybody else. Mark might ask me to do something, and if I've not done it in 20 minutes, I'll go to do it, and he's like, oh, I've done it already anyway. Right, okay.
Which reminds me, I'm sure you've still got a task to email somebody.
Come on, mate, here, try not to laugh.
I can't deny that.
Mark will do it by the end of this podcast. It's all right.
Well, that's kind of my ploy, to be fair. I just pass it off to Mark. I just don't do it and he picks it up.
if you are looking to do it, it is have the clear goal. First time round, what we wanted was we wanted to try and kind of level the playing field with a split of male and female speakers. We wanted to try and have, because we know that there's lots of talented female speakers and they weren't really getting the opportunity because it was perceived as a boys' club, or maybe they didn't have the confidence, or they didn't think that they were good enough to submit. And that's where we said, right, we're splitting it 50-50 down the middle. So we had a balance. It actually turned out that we had a special session at the end, a guest session. So we actually had more female speakers than male speakers. And that's kind of what we went for the first event. What was the driver for the second event? What did we actually say we were trying to do with that second event?
Because I think the most important driver that we've had all along, and we bypass it a little bit, is we put this on because we want to hear from these people. We want to give these people a platform ourselves. Like the speakers that we had the first time round and the second time round, it's folk that were like, they're engaging, we like them, we want to learn more. Yep. What session would we want to go to? And ultimately that becomes our downfall, right? I've done two of these events so far, and I've probably been to three sessions across them all, and it's all sessions I really wanted to go to, like all of the sessions of the day, but you just don't get time because it's against you. But we put on an event selfishly, in one hand, for ourselves, because we want to see these people, but we don't get to see it, so we put it on for you. Yeah. I think that's an important driver for us that we didn't really talk about there.
Yeah, and I think the weirdest part is that me and Ian will spend 9 months actually getting all this up and going. We'll not even see each other for 9 minutes on the whole day. It's just that's how busy and mad it gets. But yeah, this year's driver was really new speakers. So as if you, like, let's be brutally honest, right? How many times have you heard the same 15-year MVP talking about the same session that he's been bringing out for the last 5 years?
One of my bugbears, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I actually see this director, I'm kind of bored with that.
I can point to certain sessions that I could probably deliver myself because I've seen them that often.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we asked for was, we asked for new content. So we asked for it to be maybe tried once or twice elsewhere and use our event as the main platform for it. We didn't want the same thing wheeled out and new speakers. That was the things that we wanted. We wanted new content and new speakers because that's what the community needs right now. There's a lot of people doing a lot of amazing things, but there's a lot of people kind of resting on their laurels a wee bit and things are getting a bit stagnant. So
especially just now with the COVID element, everybody's went online, mm-hmm. right? So what becomes the unique part of what you're doing? If you're going and presenting at every user group around the world, or Monday through to Friday, because you can do that at the moment if that's what you want to do, but you're going to get burnout. You're going to present the same thing. The people that are going to them, because I could go to user group Malaysia, which is on whatever day of the week, tomorrow, say it's tomorrow, I could go to that tomorrow, but I don't need to be in Malaysia, whereas you used to have to do that and it would be very unique, whereas I could go to the same UGs to see the same presenters. And as we're just talking about, nobody wants to do that at the moment, so there needs to be something fresh, and that's what we're trying to bring with this event from what Marsh has talked about there, is having that original, very unexposed content.
We did see that a lot in the festive tech calendar. A lot of the submissions were ones that had been around all the user groups throughout the previous year. So, you know, I love what you guys are doing with that. It's awesome. We're definitely stealing it.
The other thing is, personally, I couldn't deliver the same session more than three times. I just get fed up with that. I don't know how people can continually do it. I really don't. I'm like, hats off to you, but I'd get bored talking about the same thing over and over. I really would.
Yeah, how can you sound interesting exactly when you talk about the same thing? You almost, it sounds so rehearsed. That's the problem that then comes from that, doesn't it?
Yeah. See, I've got a rule that I will only do it maximum 4 times. So first time is get it out in the open and work out the kinks. Second time is get it a bit better. Third time is polished. Fourth time is because somebody's begged for it and then it gets done. That's why I kind of speak. I don't speak as often as other people because I don't really want to. It's not that I don't want to create the content all the time. It's because I'll only use it 4 times. I then have to create a new, full new slide deck. And that's not a quick thing.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's a lot of effort creating a talk. I can understand why you only do a bit. So this year's event's going to be all online. So I think it's not live, is that correct? The sessions are pre-recorded, is that right?
There will be a mix. We have, so the problem that we've got is we have...
The problem we have is COVID.
Yeah. So we have a media partner. The media partner was going to be doing all the mixing of the event. So they were going to be in their studio. We were actually going to their studio as well. And we were going to be mixing in all of the live tracks. They had full control of that. However, with the latest restrictions, they're not allowed, they're not classed as essential work. So they're not allowed to be together. And they've said it's something they need to be together so that they can queue each other up. It's not something they can do online. So
you imagine to do a live session, you've got a green room particularly, or you've got a pre-live room where somebody's sitting in that, or you've got three people in there, three different streams coming into that. We then needed that to come into the mixing desk to then go out on our live broadcast. So we're bringing three people, four people, two people, one person, whatever, together. But that whole switch and transition, I was going to take a lot of people around that. So there's a lot of people sitting around the mixing desks. And the live partners, Mark just said, they're in a position where they can't do it. We're in a tier four lockdown in Glasgow. People can't travel across different communities and different local areas and bring in different people that we need for it. So it just proposes a bit of a pivot for us for what we're not able to do that at the moment. But it's January. Potentially, we're coming out of a lockdown the 1st of Feb. We'll see if that happens or not, right? Let's be honest. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. Scotland's lockdown for schools, etc., is the 1st of Feb. Down south, it's the middle of Feb. Northern Ireland's the middle of Feb. So even if we do come out of a full lockdown at the moment, I don't think it's going to be as relaxed as allowing people to go and travel. So we need to look at how we can pivot this to actually still deliver good content, original content, well-produced content. And that's where we're needing to do the whole, let's try and do some pre-recording of this as a backup so that we have some content that we can put out.
Yeah. And it is, as Ian says, it is just a backup. This is our minimal viable product is we have the ability to play all of these sessions pre-recorded. But with the volunteers we've been working with and we're trying to get just a few more in the door to be able to run production rooms. So it will be a case of people coming in and out of maybe Zoom meetings, team meetings, using a little bit of OSB or some additional software. We will try to get as many live as we can, but the backup default position will be pre-recorded sessions that will run as live with the speakers in the chat room at the time. But we're, I mean, I don't want to put numbers on it, but we want, even as a minimum, we're looking for having 50% of our sessions as live sessions.
Oh, well, that's quite a lot still. I wasn't expecting that. That's awesome. And having the speaker in the room as well to bring sort of the live question and answers is an awesome idea as well. So that's really cool.
Yeah, it seems to be a good hybrid delivery at that point. If we need to do it pre-recorded, we still need that engagement. You still need to be able to have a conversation about it. And as Mark said earlier, from what Donna's saying, it's about increasing your bubble and making sure you're available and having the homework. And if the speaker can be in the chat while that's happening, then it allows them that capacity to do that and allows the people the tactileness to be able to talk and interact with the speaker.
And I suppose it also makes it easier for new speakers as well, because they don't have to worry about the live nerves. So that's also a win.
Yeah, that's one of the big things.
That's a good positive spin. We need to add that to the literature we're sending out and why we're going recorded.
Yeah, no, we have said that to some of the speakers. Yeah. I've done some emails to the speakers and said, if you would prefer to do it without the pressure. I mean, some people are new speakers. They've never done conferences, but they've maybe done 5 minutes at a user group. If they feel comfortable enough to do it live and that's what their next progression step is, then perfect, we can offer them a platform to do that. If they would rather pre-record it twice, however they want to do it, then it's what makes them feel more comfortable to get them in front of the audience.
Yeah. Okay, so let's change tact a little bit. What's your, Mark, what's your favourite conference other than the Scottish Summit and why?
Well, I would love to say MVP Summit, but I've never actually got to go to one.
Same.
I was awarded, first time round, I was awarded the week before it. The second time round, obviously, it was all cancelled, so I never got to do that. But conference-wise, it has to be in-person. I mean, in-person conference. So, I like the summit, the CRM UG summit. The one I went to most recently was the Amsterdam one. That was really good. But I like going to little quirky places to do things rather than like big conferences. So I went to a nice field service event in Finland, in Helsinki. And that was very understated. It wasn't blasé. It wasn't come and do this and pay all this. It was just, this is specifically for field service. Boom, here you go. And that was good. Let's go with the CRM UG. Amsterdam was probably the best one so far.
What about you, Ian? Same question.
It's an interesting one for me because I've not been to many others. Been to London and Dublin for CRM Saturdays or D365 Saturdays. And I definitely liked Dublin, but I think that's more just because I like
Janet.
Town. And Janet, right? It's a socialist. Guinness is definitely a part of it. Like, I love going to Ireland and just making sure I get like a proper pint of Guinness. And I say that in fake inverted commas because I don't even know if it's any different. It's just all mindset. But I always find that the in-person ones, as Mark says, as long as, like, I'm not a big fan of the massive corporate sales ones. They don't really interest me too much personally. I prefer the social side of something like this, where it's about people giving up their free time and learn to share. There's the bigger ones that you go to that you need to buy a ticket for that are super expensive and all that. And I'm sure if you're a partner and they are really good and they've got their place, because it allows people in ISVs to kind of sell their wares and put it out there. And there's a lot of publicity they get from that. And that's awesome. Just for me, I'm much more of a kind of quieter person. I say that and I put up massive summits, but I'm definitely more introverted, so I like the kind of quieter, unique, smaller things like that. But that's just me personally.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can totally understand that. When I went to Ignite, it's very intimidating because of the size of it. So the smaller ones, you can actually make sometimes better connections with more people.
Yeah, it depends what you want from it. I think that's it. Like Ignite and stuff like that. Like I would love to go to them in one hand, because I know there's people there that I'll see and there's people that I want to see, but I will miss so much from it as well. I think there's lots of stuff that you just don't quite know where you sit with it or anything. So I don't know.
I don't know if it's I go for the technical content or I go for the community. I'd say I probably go for the community more than the tech content.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that one. I think when I went to Ignite, I didn't see as many sessions. I was more networking, chatting to people and everything like that. And you just build better relationships with people. And then, you know, from there, you can actually start learning more because they can start teaching you things and stuff. That's how I like it anyway.
I think you're right there as well. Like for me, Mark, this isn't a story about me and Mark. This is two different people in a community who Mark introduced at a conference and they built a connector for what, three words, etc. And that was something that would never have happened if it wasn't in person in communication. That was Matt Beard and Ben Vollmer. Mark, you'll be able to tell that story better than I can't quite remember it, but it's just a flashback to me, as you're saying, Richard, about the in-person and that networking element of it.
Mark, yeah, it was them, and they went off. Yeah, that was actually in Amsterdam. Ben Vollmer, who was the I think global head of sales for field service, was looking for somebody to integrate what three words into field service. And I knew somebody that had been working on what three words and APIs, and I kind of got them connected, and we sat at a wee table there and then and got it all up and running. It's the networking side of it is much better. We sat for about 2 hours doing that, missed two sessions, but it was worth it for the networking.
Yep.
Nice. So we're going to totally change gear now because we've got a couple more questions because we're running a bit low on time. So my question is, where's your favourite place in the whole world that you've been to that some people probably haven't heard of?
Ho Ham.
Where's that?
It's in Thailand.
There we go. Never heard of it.
My dad has a couple of apartments out there, so I've been there on holiday. It's a lovely place. It's about 3 hours west of Bangkok. When you drive there and you get a taxi, they do drive at about 120 mile an hour down dirt roads. So it's an interesting place, but it's lovely.
I'm going to pass on that. I'm so untraveled, apparently. Like, everywhere I've been is really, really common. That's all I can think of right now. I love Port of Pelhenza.
Cool.
Nice. Right, okay, last question, boys. If you could pick someone you know who isn't well known and would be amazing to have on our podcast next, who would you both choose and why? And let's start with Ian. So, it doesn't have to be technical, just someone you think would be an interesting person to chat to.
Do you know, there's a guy that I work with at the moment that actually, I'm going to go and get his Twitter handle because I never ever remember it. And he's kind of, he does a massive amount within the community and within Flow and stuff like that. And AJ, Ajith Mahad, totally messed up his surname there, but his Twitter handle is at My Dev Experience, and it goes by the initials ABM on there. But within Flow and stuff, he does so much, and he's really active on the Flow forums and helping out there. He's always really up top, but nobody really knows who he is, certainly not in the UK, but he's definitely my go-to for that, and I think he deserves more recognition for what he does.
What about yourself, Mark?
I was pausing there because I'm still thinking about that. See, the trouble we've got with this is, obviously, we have our own podcast and we kind of get the people on who are not really that well known ourselves to give them that spotlight. So I'm trying to think of people who we've been looking at who have maybe not got there, because a lot of the people that we either kind of work with or mentor have been, are kind of well known now. Mike Hartley is probably one who I would say would be really good. Now, Mike, Heart of the Midlands is what he kind of goes by online. And Mike's doing a lot of work with accessibility. So on making things like power apps or model-driven apps, making those accessible to people who may not be able to get the full experience with, like, whether it be slides for events and things, and try to raise as much awareness around that subject as he can. I think he's doing fantastic stuff, and Mike needs a platform to be able to take that to the next level, to get more people involved and thinking about on how to do that. Because I mean, if we are, you've probably had the email about the slide decks and we've made them all accessible. Mike was actually the guy who's written the guide on how to just add your own content and make that accessible, because it's not always thought about. So that's definitely something and somebody you should have on and have a chat with.
Definitely an unsung hero right there.
Sounds good to me. Cool.
So before we finish, you guys just mentioned about you have your own podcast. So where can our listeners listen to your podcast? What's the name of it?
What's your preference for podcast listening? Do you use Pocket Cast? Use something else? Because we're on Spotify. We're on.
You just say your name so they can find it. That's all good.
The Power Platform Podcast.
Cool.
So you can find that on any of your preferred streaming devices. We're not a technical podcast. Ours is about the community, so it's more about the people than about the tech. So we talk about things like pay gap, diversity, how they got into things. We had a chat with somebody recently who is a international futsal player. We spoke with a new consultant who was an opera singer, and just how they got into the community. So it's a strange one, but it's more, as I say, we are more about the community than about the tech, as you can probably tell, because we're not very good with the tech.
That's cool. So where can our listeners find you online as well?
So on Twitter, I am Bearded365 Guy. On LinkedIn, I just go by name, Ian Connolly. That's probably where you'll find me most. Not Facebook or WhatsApp, apparently, but that's a whole other story right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, for me, just the Mark Christie, pretty much on anything. I don't do that much on social media. I just more promote events and stuff. All my social media is kind of work related, but yeah, you can find anything.
Yeah, our main focus at the moment is like even the Scottish Summit Twitter account. That's probably the most active one out of any of the two accounts that we've just mentioned, or four accounts, whatever.
Awesome. Cool. So that's all we have time for today. So huge, big thank you to you both for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure having you. I hope everyone enjoyed today's show, and we look forward to bringing you more content soon.
Cheers all. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for having us.